All right, hello, this is Curtis Cooperman, and I'm speaking with Omnic Onik, and we're going to just start reading her book, From Venus I Came, and we're on chapter one. It's called From Venus I Came. Hello, Omnic, are you?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, all right, people will know you're in the background, and you can make comments along the way anytime you want.
All right.
All right, here we go. This is page 11. So, from Venus I came. It starts, "It was in the deep of night among the remote mountains and desert wilderness of Nevada that the glowing spaceship touched down. The odd humming sound steadily became fainter and fainter. Then, as if from nowhere, a round opening appeared in the circular craft, and several figures stepped down into the headlights of an approaching car. One was a tall, handsome man with his long blonde hair neatly tucked away under a hat. Beside him stood a little girl and the ship's pilot. Minutes later, the tall man and his little blonde niece were on their way down the bumpy desert road, while the mysterious spaceship sped off into the starry sky. The most earth-shaking revelation will be that since Earth was first colonized, human beings have been arriving from the planets in this very solar system, planets which most people today believe cannot possibly have advanced human life. Their spaceships land secretly in remote parts of the world, where they are met by friends who have already been absorbed into Earth society. Most of the newcomers do become involved in life here, something that has been going on for a long time, but the people who know about us, or even suspect we exist, are very few in number. Today, after two decades of silence, the truth about that chilly desert night can be told. Until this moment, for what has seemed sometimes like an eternity, I have lived the life of Sheila. But Sheila was to be my name only until the time was right for me to tell Earth's people who I really am and where I really came from. That time has arrived. My name is Omnic Onik. I was the little blonde girl of that night in the desert, and the stately man beside me was Odin, my loving uncle. Both of us had arrived from Titania, the planet you call Venus. As a child, I had made the decision to spend the rest of my life on Earth as a matter of destiny based on karmic reasons. I am one among thousands of people from the neighboring planets who make Earth their home. Some of our people stay only long enough to complete special missions, but many have made the courageous decision to spend the rest of our lives here. Scientists, doctors, educators, artists, engineers, and ordinary citizens from these advanced planets live and work secretly among the people of Earth. The idea that Earth cannot be the only planet in the universe with intelligent life is pretty well accepted today. Millions of people believe that among the UFOs are spaceships from distant planets more advanced than Earth. The bold and adventurous will go a few steps further to wonder about the story of my life and to put aside for a while all the canned truths about planets in the solar system. My fondest hope in writing about my life on Venus and on Earth is that people will be awakened to the truth, as incredible as the truth may seem. It's sad that for so many years, images of barren and hostile planets have been drummed into people's minds. Hardly a child finishes school without learning about the extremes on Venus and Mars. Telescopes and space probes all say the same thing, So it seems. So it is no wonder that people today hardly have an original thought about what really does exist out there. I know from personal experience that most of my popular ideas about our planets are far from being true. The greatest government secret of the century is that advanced human civilizations have been discovered on many of the planets in our solar system. And the physical spaceships which are seen in the skies every day are from some of them. Governments from the world know as well as people like myself, living secretly within the Earth's population, number well into the thousands. For their own good reasons, as I shall explain later, governments and military powers on Earth are doing all in their power to suppress any evidence that may leak out from UFO witnesses, space probes, astronauts, astronomers, and anyone else who may know of us. I am not saying that all astronauts and astronomers know. Meanwhile, most of the public hears from unsure and unreliable astronomers and government sources and is satisfied. No wonder the truth is so unbelievable. I can understand why people like myself are called crackpots. It is much easier to believe the latest evidence from the space probes than to suspect there might be some grand secret. In reality, Venus and the rest of our 12 planets are very much alive. More than half the planets in our solar system do support human life. The civilizations that I know of are all spiritually and technologically more advanced, much more advanced, and more ancient than any race living on Earth today. And beyond this family of planets are countless more solar systems, most of which also support human life. Man is truly a universal species. The story of men on Earth will clear up many questions that need to be answered about our people before I go on with the story of my own life. Lately, more and more people are reconsidering the conventional stories of man's past. Archaeologists are admitting that advanced civilizations may indeed have existed on Earth tens and hundreds of thousands of years ago. There is also enough evidence indicating that during prehistoric times, man had technology superior to today's. There is also evidence showing that throughout history, Earth civilizations have been visited and helped by people from other planets. I have known this for a long time. It is true. Next paragraph. In every age, visitors from outer space have had an influence on the culture and technology of people around the globe. Sacred literatures of the world speak of flying spaceships and man-like beings descending from the sky, bringing great wonders. Legends and myth also mention man-like beings landing on Earth and living among the people. Ruins of cities exist whose architecture cannot be duplicated by modern technology, and those rock engravings speak clearly of the extraterrestrials who built them. Unexplainable things scattered around the world all seem to tell the same story. Ancient man was much smarter than people admit, and he was never entirely alone. The Venusian village where I was born and raised is called Tetonia. As a child, I learned the story of man on Earth in Tetonia's Temple of History, a place of learning that is more like a time machine than a school. Millions of years ago, our first expeditions landed on Kalna'ar, in parentheses, Earth. the youngest planet in our solar system. The space scientists of several planets had watched Earth undergo evolution, ever so often sending ships to investigate. The planets of a solar system, I should mention, are not all created at once. They are constantly forming, maturing, and dying. New planets are constantly being colonized, and dying planets are being abandoned. Our expeditions found Earth to be the greenest, most lushly vegetated planet in this solar system. But as beautiful as it was, the entire planet was soon considered unfit for colonization, and it was without doubt very dangerous for any of our people to settle here. As word spread, Earth became known as the hostile negative planet. It was then that it was called Kalnaar, meaning negative child. After those explorations, nobody stayed there any longer than was absolutely necessary. A problem with Earth was that it had only one moon. Planets in the physical universe usually have two or more moons, so that each can help balance the other's influence. For a planet to have no moons also is fine, but to have only one can unbalance a planet. In this solar system, Earth is therefore unique. As the moon revolves around the Earth, its gravity slightly stretches the Earth itself, causing tides. If these tides would have been the only problem, our early explorers should have rejoiced. The moon also has an effect on any human being who decided to live here, or throughout the ages, has been born here, partly because of the water in our bodies. The moon has just as definite an influence on us as on the oceans. It adversely affects our minds and emotions, a condition that exists throughout history, and will exist as long as there is only one moon, and until the consciousness on Earth has changed to become more balanced. Not until people use advanced technologies for the benefit of all, and not for personal enrichment of a few, can such new technologies be implemented to harmonize the repercussions of one single moon. One of the problems is the flaring of negative emotion in masses of people, which is actually a self-destructive force in man. Mental illnesses are also related to the phases of the moon. The word lunacy comes from this effect. Visitors to Earth are often advised to drink plenty of water during times of the full moon to help adjust to their lives here. Not only does the moon play with man's emotions, but the whole unbalancing effect also reduces people's lifespans. And because the planetary vibrations are coarser or denser than on Venus or Mars, there is much more illness and depression. With good reason, Earth became an unpopular planet in its early years and was not colonized until life on Venus and its neighbors had changed drastically. Social and cultural reforms on Venus were very slow for many thousands of years. Life was troubled much like it is on Earth today. Even worse, and the common people decided to do something about it. The breaking point was a planetary revolution which bloodlessly destroyed money and the class structure forever. The consciousness of Venus's people changed to a point where the once wealthy and powerful had no choice but to change or leave the planet. In the time For each, the planets underwent the same kind of growing pains. Earth happened to be the nearest planet that could be colonized, so those who left took their chances here. But they were well equipped when they arrived, with advanced technologies that included anti-gravity, spaceships, electricity, solar, and nuclear power, and many powerful gadgets not yet rediscovered by modern man. Their governments and the way of life they established were very much the same as what had been overthrown on the home planet. They were designed in such a way that a few benefited at the expense of many, and slavery was a common thing. Civilizations flourished for a while. The inevitable happened. Already immersed in such passions as greed, vanity, and anger, these newcomers succumbed to the negative influences of this unbalanced planet. People's emotions flared, lifespans shortened, and natural disasters turned life into a nightmare. Earth became a planet of ups and downs, very much like it is today. It was doomed to repeated cycles of war and destruction unless the people could grow spiritually, which has not yet happened. The original colonial civilizations expired in nuclear wars and natural holocausts, and also the slow death of losing knowledge and culture generation after generation. Battling the elements just to survive took so much of the people's time that education of the young suffered and precious knowledge was lost. The stronger visitors in early age lost no time in conquering the weaker. None of these people learned the lessons of war and progress and peace as the home planet had done. Ancient history is an endless tale of one great civilization following another in dominating the choice regions of Earth. Lemuria rose and fell as all the others, although it was one of the most advanced civilizations to develop on Earth. The capital city, Charakota, now lives beneath the sands of the great Gobi Desert. Once again, there had been the almost total depression of the poor at the hands of the greedy and powerful ruling class. A vast area of land suddenly sank into what is now the Pacific Ocean, leaving few traces for the survivors to find. Atlantis was a great island continent that existed in what we know as the Atlantic Ocean. In many ways, the Atlanteans were totally superior to modern man, but they too experienced technology racing ahead of their spiritual maturity to control it. Thanks to nuclear testing and many other misuses of their technology, the continued breakup and the last islands sank beneath the sea in a single day, leaving very few survivors. Although all these turbulent years, the Brotherhood of the Planets looked upon Earth as an immature child who needed guidance. As civilizations rose and fell, spaceships from Venus, Mars, Saturn, and Jupiter came here, and our people continue to come here to live. Those are the four planets responsible for colonizing Earth, and each is today the home of one of the four original race types evolving here. The white race, known by many people as Aryans, come from Venus. We are the tall, angelic beings so often spoken of in your UFO contacts. Normally, we are 7 to 8 feet tall and are well known for our long blonde hair and blue or green eyes. Our hands are broad, with long and slender tapering fingers. The outer fingers curve toward the straight middle finger, making each hand look almost like the flame of a candle. Very noticeable are usually high foreheads, large and wide-set eyes, and high cheekbones. Our temples are more sunk in than most, and barely visible are small bony ridges on each side of the forehead, hidden by the way we wear our hair. The yellow race is from the planet Mars. These are the slender people, small in stature, with golden or dark brown hair and olive to yellow complexion. Their large, slanted eyes are anywhere from gray to dark brown in color. Martians are known for their selective nature and the futuristic, many-leveled, elaborated cities we see in science fiction illustrations. The Martians' life wave is not in our physical density either, but corresponds with the astral level. Martians are associated with the histories of the Oriental and ancient Spanish peoples. A red race came to Earth from the Saturn system, although it first evolved on Mercury. A change in the orbit of Mercury took it closer to the Sun, and as living conditions deteriorated, the people migrated to Saturn. Saturnorians are known to have red to brown hair and a ruddy complexion, with yellow to green eyes. A tall and stocky people, they are known in our solar system for their athletic nature. The Atlanteans and American Indians are among those who can trace their heritage back to Saturn. The Egyptians and Aztec people, among others, were very much influenced by the Saturnians. A black race evolved in the Jupiter system. These are a tall, royal-looking people with broad faces and square jaws. Their hair is a deep, glistening black, and their eyes are from purple to violet. The Jupiterians are also known for their beautiful voices and open, sharing nature of being. Descendants are in Africa and other parts of the world. In all the centuries of struggle, Earth has never been forgotten or neglected. Compassionate people from the home planets have always been here to help their races. There were times when the people of Earth remembered their true heritage, and visitors from space and those of us who lived here were openly welcomed and known. During the more barbaric times and in recent decades, the extraterrestrials have been more cautious in making their presence known. During the times of the Lemurian and Atlantis, we are recognized for our concern about the spiritual, cultural, and technical progress of Earthmen. The people of Saturn, for example, were helped in the race of Atlantis. In ancient Egypt, a good relationship existed between extraterrestrials and the pharaohs. Then, as in the time of Atlantis, scientists from other planets brought spiritual and technological knowledge to Earth. Among the engineers constructing the pyramids were people from other planets. Egypt's surge in culture was due to this influence. Page 20. There was no exception during the so-called Dark Ages of the past, and space travelers were always here during those times. But instead of being seen for what they really were, they were looked upon as gods. Much of the world's sacred literature and legends speak of them and their work here on Earth. The visitors also learned their own lessons in this progress. They learned from experience the Earth's peculiar nature and how new technology was quickly exploited in the struggle for power and domination and the disasters that resulted. They became very weary of man on Earth and as a consequence refused to share their knowledge freely. Since this withholding of knowledge being the civilizations of Earth have been little aware of their true heritage, spiritual leaders were sent more often and any technical help was given in small, safer doses. During your biblical time, space people exercised a greater influence over the spiritual growth of Earthmen. Many of the prophets and spiritual giants were extraterrestrials. Your Old Testament contains many references to spaceships, heavenly beings coming from the sky, and leaders going off to speak with God. Many other parts of the world also experience visits by the gods from the heavens, bringing spiritual truths to the people. Never again was technology given freely and completely to Earth. Instead, scientists were infiltrated into societies to secretly help mankind, making sure that the knowledge they brought was not misused. The very same thing is being done today. Meanwhile, the sciences and technology have experienced a new surge of growth on Earth. Electricity, steel, engines, aircraft, nuclear power, and much more has been rediscovered. Wars continue and become more deadly, and most of the people know nothing of the inspiring kind of life on Earth. On Earth's many neighbors in space. In the late 1940s, UFOs began to be reported in surprising numbers, and many people were amazed to discover that they outmaneuvered and outran man's most sophisticated aircraft. Governments and military forces around the world were puzzled, but very much interested, and also very quiet. Few people were at that time aware of the sudden interest in Earth. In their continuing experiments with radar, scientists had gathered radar beams which eventually reached Venus. Monitoring stations there received what seemed at first to be distress signals from Earth. A reply was sent. Experts on Earth, of course, could not decipher the signals, but they did correctly calculate that the signals came from a near planet. Ships were sent by the Venusians to investigate. What they found was frightening. A planet inventing and exploding ever more powerful nuclear weapons. The last 50 years on Earth has been a time of tremendous technical growth, but at the same time, relatively little spiritual growth. It was the same sad pattern we had seen on Atlantis and Lemuria before this. The rebirth of the dreaded atomic sciences became the grave concern to scientists and spiritual leaders of the Brotherhood of Planets. No longer would the problems of Earth be entirely her own. With this awareness of nuclear power, this planet has become a menace to the entire solar system. Nations of the world began to notice the mysterious UFOs over capital cities, industrial sites, military bases, research centers, and nuclear testing grounds as well. Now there was little doubt that these ships were manned or controlled by a superior technology. Military officials began to worry. Being mystified was bad enough, but learning the truth about them was worse. Leaders weren't quite prepared for the shock of learning that advanced human life exists elsewhere. This all came to a head when representatives of the Brotherhood contacted key leaders with enough proof as to who they were. More than one U.S. president has learned the startling truth firsthand. Our messages were ones of advice and persuasion, but never coercion. Over a number of years and through many exchanges of views, much was learned about the planets and their people. Our representatives explained that even with our advanced powers, we would not think of interfering in Earth's affairs. If we wanted to, we could have conquered Earth very easily at any time. But this was not in our line with our spiritual belief, allowing each individual the freedom to making his own decision and accept his own experiences. If a nuclear war were to develop, which imperiled our representatives or our ships, even then we would not interfere. We do not kill, even in self-defense anymore, either as individuals or as a people. Nuclear power and its dangers were the highlight of these talks. Both the leading powers were advised directly of the dangers and futility of such confrontation. Our scientists made it clearly known to top military leaders and to nuclear scientists that to continue their testing would be self-destructive. Instruments aboard our ships and space laboratories, we explained, had detected damages unknown to Earth scientists. Raised eyebrows and objections came when we turned our attention to political systems. Our own experience had been that the two- or three-party system causes untold problems because a large part of the population is always unhappy with what the party in power does, and none have ever been truly benevolent. Corruption, unjust practices, and destructive competition are built right into the system. We stress that this was not theory, that other planets had the same problems before Earth was colonized. We pointed out how the daily power struggles are nothing more than destructive, and the quarrels between nations are so often petty children's games, and that democracy, including representative democracy, really exists nowhere on this planet. Nations of this world are ruled by oligarchs of wealth. Their bloodstream is money. You people have no idea how complete this control of the world really is. The true picture is as shocking and unbelievable as the truth about our nearby planets. What was the outcome of these talks? Eventually, the two superpowers and a number of nations agreed to end nuclear testing in the atmosphere and to depart from the massive deterrent concept concerned to ensure mutual annihilation in the foreseeable future. But most of our people's ideas were rejected, and at the same time, an age of secrecy was ushered in. Too many people have too many personal interests at stake to allow the truth to become known. If our existence became common knowledge, it would signal the end to the widespread corruption and exploitation on planet Earth. Here, a very small percentage of the people own most of the resources, land, factories, and money in the world, and money is the tool by which the control is exercised. As difficult as it may be to understand, we have learned to live without currency or money on Venus. The direct result is no hoarding, no accumulation, and no weapon of exploitation. The difference in life is mind-staggering. Also, Venus has no central or national governments and nothing resembling a class structure. The wealthy and powerful people of Earth who are aware of us do not want the masses to learn our way of life. Secrecy is a matter of survival. How are you doing, Omnic?
Fine.
Oh, good. Okay, we're on page 24.
Okay.
People with financial interests in the energy industries are very anxious to suppress anything to do with the UFOs or their occupants. Magnetic and solar power provide the energy needs of technically advanced planets, being unlimited and costing little. Introduction to such technologies here would put the other energy industry out of business. Magnetic power is also used to run our flying discs and the larger motherships. If everyone had such a craft whose cost of operation is almost zero, autos, jets, and trains would no longer be needed. Neither would there need to be highways, railroads, airports, or 100 other inconveniences of our modern life. People wouldn't need to live in cities any longer, because commuting 1,000 miles every day would be simple, speedy, and inexpensive. Consider the losses to vested interest in such a case. Their position is clear. Technology from Earth's neighboring planets would bring change, unwanted change, to their lives of selfish people who seek to preserve the system. Today we have a number of enemies here, and although the common man might welcome us with open arms, we do consider Earth to be a hostile planet. Our ships have been shot at by the military, by police, by frightened citizens. Our ships are hunted down when spotted, even though we show no hostility. This is one good reason for avoiding populous areas. The Brotherhood is weary of Earth's immaturity, which happens to be only a reflection of the young age of this planet. People all too often react in a negative way to something as unexpected as one of our ships and as completely foreign to their concepts. Man on Earth has gone through so many wars and disasters that the idea of life on other planets is not too comforting. Your science fiction movies of creatures invading Earth have not been of any help. Our ships are elusive because they are flying over enemy territory, but they are not considered really enemies by the people themselves. Besides, treating us to undeserved hostility, governments and militants have done a thorough job of clamping down a lid of secrecy over actual sightings, landings, and contacts. Books have been written showing how the military and intelligence agencies have constantly controlled the press, silenced witnesses, issued false statements, and confiscated valuable evidence. This is unfortunate. A great number of people are aware of the censorship, but an even greater number of people would be utterly shocked to learn how serious and thorough the censorship really is. Despite the harassment, our spacecraft continue their operations here. With the expanding technology, our observations have grown to the greatest level in centuries. More of our convoy patrols your skies, land, and contact more people on Earth than ever before in your recorded history. Those of us who live here are more and more making our presence known to trusted friends. Before going on, I must advise that all UFOs are not from our brotherhood of planets, or even from our solar systems. Some are actually astral lights and interdimensional entities, and some are unknown to us. Some came from great distances. The whole picture is very complex, but there have been a great number of landings and contacts by our people. In all parts of the world, our ships are active, watching Earth's atmosphere, land, lands, and oceans. The serious effects of continued nuclear testing are of special concern, as well as natural events such as earthquakes, climate changes, and axial tilt of the Earth. Seeing all this activity, more and more people are becoming convinced that some of the UFOs actually do come from more advanced planets and are slower to laugh at somebody else's experience with UFOs or their occupants. But the connection to your neighboring planets has not yet been made public, and may not be for some time. Next paragraph. It may be of interest and report that the gravity of Saturn and Jupiter are not as great as the surfaces at the surface as your scientists suspect, and that neither Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, or the planets beyond are ice cold, with the exception of Mercury. Distance from the Sun does not control any planet's surface temperature. And that is very interesting, Omnic, because Tesla said that the Sun was an oscillator.
And yeah, the heat of the planet depends on the magnetic force.
Aha! Well, everyone on Earth, most of us have had a sunburn, and we think the Sun is some big fireball in the sky, but it's not.
It's radiating heat.
Yes, radiating heat. Okay.
It's a radiation, and it interacts with the gravitational force of the planet.
Well, it's a simple little science that is kept from us, and it keeps us in the dark.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's much to be learned.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm in the middle of this paragraph, so it goes on. Omnic writes, she says, it is true that Pluto and the planets beyond are affected by another astral belt between Neptune and Pluto that increases the energy of the Sun's radiation by acting as an electrical grid. The belt between Mars and Jupiter does the same for Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Since the blossoming of the U.S. and Russian space programs, probes have been sent to nearby planets. Here have been the first opportunities to penetrate another planet's atmosphere and take photos at close range, but considering the censorship, I doubt that any surprises will be made known soon. Most of the data seems sent back to Earth has never been released. Carefully selected proof that human life is impossible on other planets is accepted by the public. After all, space probes sent directly to the surface cannot lie, but those in control of them can. Other people who have decided to live on Earth are very quiet about it, especially those of us who have important jobs. For them to do any talking at this time is out of the question. They have too much to lose a mission. They have too much to lose a mission on Earth, or possibly their lives. What if a respected scientist at a U.S. nuclear research lab suddenly admitted that he was a scientist from Venus, Or what if a high government official did the same? He could be either ridiculed or believed, neither of which is very comfortable. Why my people continue to help this planet, not to mention living here, probably is not easy to understand. Why leave a peaceful and comfortable life to live in such a negative environment here on Earth? People have asked me the same thing. Why did I leave Venus when life was so much more pleasant there? The answer lies in the design of the universe and also in Earth's unique place in our solar system. For thousands of years, our space travelers have been exploring the physical universe, everywhere finding the most exacting order and regularity. Not only atoms, but also planets and solar systems follow natural laws that existed even before this galaxy was formed. Cosmic plans and laws exist, of which man on Earth knows very little. The design of the physical universe is meaningful to those who have discovered its secrets. The universe was designed with one idea in mind, to support life in its many forms. As scientists on Earth are beginning to learn, life is no accident, and neither are the many natural laws that govern it, laws that are found in any solar system. On every level of life in the physical universe, we have found patterns, order, and cycles which we accept and learn from.
It's part of a divine plan.
Part of the divine plan?
Yeah, the Creator's plan.
Well, it's a plan that needs to be recognized.
And we're trying to follow that plan and cultivate it.
Good. Well, you have a lot said in this book that needs to be heard. And this is a treasure to own this book. I'm so happy to have a copy. Everyone needs a copy of this book to hear these words. And this is why we're doing this. So I'll just repeat this one line. On every level of life in the physical universe, we have found patterns, order, and cycles which we accept and learn from. The cosmic being has not forgotten man, one of the higher life forms in the physical universe, just as the laws of physics and chemistry can be found everywhere. So can the minerals, planets, and animals. In fact, you may be surprised to find out how many planets and animals are really not native to Earth, but which were brought here by the colonists.
Exactly.
Very interesting to find this or hear this. Every planet has been designed to support life in many levels, and so it was no surprise for us to discover through our travels that most planets do support human life. Man is not a creature of the Earth, but a creature of the universe who has colonized Earth.
Exactly.
Thank you. The human species has been universally designed and can adapt to exist in many places. If explorers had never found Eskimos living near the Arctic Circle, the common belief today might have been that man could not adapt to those extreme conditions. But over time, the human body can and does adapt to many different conditions in different extremes. Sooner or later, the truth of what I'm saying will be demonstrated. Man, as a universal form of life, has evolved on other planets, and in some cases to levels that are spiritually, intellectually, and physically inconceivable to man on Earth. Inconceivable to man of Earth. The Venusians and our friends in the Brotherhood are compassionate people. We too had a history very much like yours, up to the present day. Venus has had its wars and power struggles, the oppression of the poor and the cruelties. Our concern is that Earth is having trouble growing up. The same mistakes are repeated over and over again. Instead of progressing beyond the age of wars, Earth has been arrested at that level for a frightening long time, and the situation is getting worse instead of better. A black cloud hangs over the entire planet. With good reason, our scientists continue to work in giant spaceships high in Earth's atmospheres, while people from all walks of life continue to live here. We are drawn in compassion for the suffering that Earth's people are going through. A number of us are living on Earth to fulfill our own personal needs for growth, myself included. As the negative planet in our solar system, Earth attracts people who need negative experience as part of their growth. In the East, people call this need or duty karma, which fits hand in glove with reincarnation. Reincarnation is an accepted fact of life among the people of our brotherhood of planets. It is very real, as anyone who lives in an advanced culture knows. Scientifically, we have broken through barriers you call death, thanks to ages of spiritual and technical progress. Every person alive today in the physical universe has lived many times before, but Earth's people in the West generally do not know it. Keeping reincarnation in mind, it is not really so tragic for us on Earth to be living on a negative planet. Negative experiences are only part of a long period of growth through many lifetimes on many and sometimes different planets. Each personally will be an individual forever. Each personality will be an individual forever, even after he no longer incarnates on Earth or any other place in the worlds of time and space. Soul is the existence of each individual. Consciousness and personality develop through experiences made in each and every life cycle. Karma is an invisible law which we all obey, whether we like it or not, or even believe in it. It is known as the law of cause and effect because all that a person does, thinks, or feels has an effect on him. Sometimes the effect or fruit of his action comes years or even lifetimes later, but there is no escaping it. The law of karma governs every circumstance of life until all the debts are paid or collected. It is not determinism because every moment we are creating fresh karma and reaping the old. It is a very exacting law, and no one can escape the suffering or happiness he himself has caused. One of the many reasons for coming to Earth was to balance out some of my karma. I needed to learn the lessons of compassion and to tie up some of the loose ends left behind from my previous lives on Earth. Life on Venus was bliss, and I could easily have chosen to stay, but I realized that living out my life, my full life on Venus, would only have delayed the inevitable. Eventually, I would have been reborn on Earth. As I look back now, I am glad that I made the decision to spend the rest of the days of my life on Earth, despite all the suffering and hardship I have had to live through. It is not unusual for our people to come here for this same reason of balancing out karma. Either they need to settle karmic debts with people living here with whom they have had relationships in past lives, or they need some kind of negative experience as war or poverty. In our solar system, these experiences are no longer available anywhere else. My arrival here as a child was unique and different. Becoming absorbed into a new society is not only tricky, but dangerous. An adult who lands on Earth arrives here prepared with training and experience, but I had to be planted into an Earth family without their knowing it. With the resources my people had at their fingertips, the plan was a success. I am sure there are families who know of us and who would have offered to raise me, but karmically, I was drawn to this one particular family. Very interesting, I'll make.
Yeah, well, that's really nice.
Very interesting.
And making a choice, you know, to come, at least with my knowledge intact, is very helpful for myself and for others.
Mm.
Because without this knowledge, I couldn't be sharing the knowledge with others.
Well, this is an old-time way of sharing it, printing a book, but it still works today. You know, it still works, but this is extremely interesting, and I'm just on page 30. It sounds like there's a lot of interesting stuff to come.
Yeah, when I was born on Earth, you know, I didn't have computers, so I had to choose the way that was available.
Yes, well, it's, good thing we have computers. All right, I'll continue again. But please make any comment you'd like anytime. As a youngster, I have never dared to say a word about Venus. Not to my family, not to my best friends. Before leaving Venus, I was warned over and over how foolish and dangerous that would be. People were not ever aware that life existed on Venus. In your movies, astronauts always seem to find monsters, evil dictators, and warring empires on other planets, which sounds more like what our ships find on Earth. Which cracked me up when I first read that. A psychiatrist, I'm sure, would have been called in to treat my overripe imagination and save the poor child from a world of fantasy. Later in life, the explanation would have sounded more sophisticated if I would have made the mistake of talking. There is no doubt that she is just a mixed-up kid from the backwoods of Tennessee. Her emotionally painful childhood sent her to seek escape in a dream world. Venus is a fantasy land in which to seek comfort and place to find new meaning in life. Now that I have begun telling my story, I hear this reaction often. It does not offend me, because I know it is due to a limited understanding. In the city of Retz, R-E-T-Z, I was first told In the city of Retz, I was first told of a chance to live on Earth, as well as working off some of my karma. I was at some time to fulfill a special mission for our people by breaking the secrecy of my presence and telling of our brotherhood of planets. I would be contacted later in my life with more of the details. I was chosen to be in this spotlight because the story of our people should not be given only through phenomena in the sky or landing spaceships on the surface. These can be attacked explained away to others, or covered up as they almost always have been in the past. Breaking the news should not be too shocking, such as an occupant sleeping, such as an occupant stepping from a spacecraft in a public gathering. That denies too many the opportunity for free choice and may result in unacceptable culture shock. Instead, the real story needs to be told by someone who wouldn't seem like an alien suddenly arriving from space. I am not endangering any secret mission by admitting that I was born on Venus. I am not a scientist with any secret knowledge about convoys or magnetic power. Today, my mission is to write this biography. It is just a sincere effort to share with you our way of life. Because I've spent so much time here, people will find it easier to accept and understand me as a real human being. I can identify very easily with the people of Earth, and they can identify more easily with me. Many of the pains and ordeals I've gone through are the same as those others have experienced in their own lives. When I first decided to leave Venus, I looked to my future more as an adventure than anything else. The spiritual masters in Renz, of course, warned me not to expect an easy, pleasant existence, but the excitement of going to another planet filled my mind. The suffering I had heard about didn't seem very real to me. We are aware of the pain, the poverty, and the wars on Earth, but these had not been my personal experiences in life. It was much like being an affluent Westerner who is little affected by the starvation in Asia because it isn't his personal experience. When I stepped down from our spaceship that night in Nevada, I was unsure about myself, uncertain and uneasy about all the things that were to happen. I was fortunate not to have known then how bad karma can be, or I may have turned around right there and gone back home. Angels Don't Cry was one of the earlier titles I had in mind for this book, because there was so much joy in our lives that we rarely cry, except, of course, when we think of Earth or our past lives there. Since being here, I have cried and cried so much that I could well be that it could well be the story of my life on Earth. My life here has been full of adventure and intrigue, but on the other hand, it was a rare thing for me to be among people who really cared for or loved me. Coming here meant leaving all that I knew and loved. A life of creativity and peace. After my uncle left me behind in Arkansas and returned to go back home, I was alone, a stranger in a strange land. I have learned from experience how very real karma is. My life here has been a great heap of karma compressed into one lifetime so that I shall be done with it forever. If only people knew how surely all their misdeeds will one day meet them face to face, then who in his right mind could knowingly hurt another person? Do unto others only what you would have them do unto you. Became everything you do unto others will be done unto you eventually. That is one big lesson I share with you. I am not embittered today. The past is behind me, and I try to enjoy the happiness of the present moment. The world has treated me just as I treated it, and everyone grows from his experiences, good and bad. I, for one, learned of simple lessons of compassion, just as every other individual on any planet learns his lessons. My life on Earth provides that just because I happen to be born on a more advanced planet does not mean that I escape the lessons of my past. Less than a few decades ago, people would not have been ready to accept the idea of this autobiography. It would have been useless for any of us to do much talking, and those who did so regretted it. It is the new level of consciousness, a level of awareness that has made this book possible now, and depending on the public's reaction to me, there may be more of us making ourselves known. Above and beyond our individual reasons for being here, we are very much concerned with the consciousness of man of Earth. This has to do with the basic understanding of life and the universe and the awareness of his own self in it all. Natural powers such as mental telepathy and precognition, all of which we are adept at, weren't too well accepted not too many years ago. Esoteric subject was mostly studied in small private groups. Books on the occult subjects were given little attention and often ridiculed by less informed, and the media were reluctant to treat psychic subjects seriously. The natural powers of man were looked upon as either satanic or non-existent, really a sad state of affairs indeed. Our overall concern in this age is to play some part in the spiritual awakening of Earth. Political and social reform is not directly our goal. As the people of Venus understand it, the way of life on Earth is only a reflection of the spiritual unfoldment or consciousness of its people as individuals. The reason for life in the physical universe is nothing more than spiritual awakening, and no part of life is ever separate from this main overall scheme. Our understanding of spirituality is probably not what you would, Our understanding of spirituality is probably not what you would expect. It does not necessarily mean being a religious devotee or trying to live an apparently saintly life. Our spiritual teaching is a planetary teaching, which is really an advanced form of science. At one end of the spectrum, it offers a complete understanding of life, death, God, and the hereafter, and all the various subjects which religious and spiritual paths on Earth delve into. We allow each individual to prove to himself via actual experience, what life after death is really like, and what that being you call God really is. At the other end of the spectrum, our teachings include a thorough understanding of the physical universe and its laws, which reflects in the wonders of our marvelous technology. We have always been interested in the spiritual paths, religions, the occult schools that have sprung up on Earth. In past ages, we were involved in sending spiritual leaders here, around some of whom religions later developed. Most of the paths are limited today in the freedom, wisdom, and love they offer their followers, but we cannot criticize any of them because each attracts followers at a certain level of consciousness, and those levels are not all the same. If a path offers what the individual needs and satisfies him, then for that one, it is a good path.
What chapter are you on now?
I'm on chapter 1. I'm on page 34, and we have one, two, three. 3.5 more pages.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. As a person matures spiritually, he learns that the conventional religions and paths no longer satisfy him because something vital is missing. I had the same problem when I came to Earth. I was frightened being in such a young body, but having a head full of knowledge beyond many people's understanding. I find it difficult suppressing things very natural for me, such as picking up other people's thoughts. There were times when I had to hold myself back from telling all my friends and even people on the street that they were walking around in sleep. Because my spiritual upbringing was so very different from the teachings offered me on earth, I didn't accept any while I was here. As a child in Tennessee, I was raised in a Protestant church, which seemed very primitive to me. I became disillusioned and hurt by the limits of the spiritual teachings and religions that I came across in this country. The Venusians live according to spiritual and natural law, rather than man-made laws in every area of life. This is a very basic difference between the other planets and Earth. Personal experience is the vital something which is missing in conventional Earth religions and paths. Before leaving Venus, I was told of limitations in Earth spiritual teachings and that I would not find satisfying. But I was promised that someday in my life on Earth, I would find the natural teachings, which on Venus are called Omnoti. Could you pronounce that for me?
Omnodiavidya.
Yes. Thank you.
Omnodiavidya.
Thank you. The laws of the Supreme Deity. The name would be different, but the teaching is the same. And it would be brought forward when the time was right and the people were ready. It has existed on Earth since the planet was colonized and has been taught under many different names, at times openly and at times secretly from person to person. During the time of Lemuria and of Atlantis too, it was brought into the open, but most of the time camouflage was necessary because of the freedom of awareness this teaching offers. Organized religions and rulers consider it dangerous to their well-being and self-preservation. For this reason, you usually find it suppressed in some way by these authorities. And now we have 2 more pages. Pythagoras was one master of that teaching who taught it secretly under the guise of philosophy. Jesus taught it as the wisdom of love. This most ancient of teaching has been known in Tibet for thousands of years. It has been known here since the first colonization. Then a time came when it was successfully suppressed by powerful religions and had to be brought to Earth once more. Remote places in the Himalayas were chosen to guard the basic works where they still are today. If there is any one factor more responsible for the progress of the people of Titania, it would have to be this science, which we may call laws of the Supreme Deity. It has allowed us to discover the deepest secrets of the universe, of time and space, matter and energy. We have discovered some of the deepest and most profound secrets of man himself and the mind and the consciousness. All this is reflected in the wonders of life on Venus, wonders rivaling science fiction and utopia on Earth. We have no wars or poverty, and our people do not know disease. Lifetime spans into hundreds of years. Physical aging ceases at about 20 and 30 years. Our cities are small, simply designed, and free of crime. Long ago, the magnetic and solar powers developments revolutionized our lives. Space holds some of the greatest challenges. We are a people hungry for knowledge. The universe has been so designed that there is always more to learn. Our ships are not limited by gravity, friction, or the so-called speed of light, and some of them are miles long. Our planets in this solar system are only a few days away. A trip between solar systems is even faster. As individuals, the Venusians are well aware of the real powers of the mind and consciousness, what you call psychic powers, are child's play to us. Mental telepathy is the usual way in which we communicate, and we are also able to look into the future, remember past lives, or move objects by thought. Many of us have learned to move backward or forward in time. Any person trying to use such powers must have the spiritual maturity to be responsible with power. In living on a negative planet, it is all too easy to misuse power, and people all over Earth who are unknowingly and unwisely dabbling with such powers will pay for their mistakes for many lifetimes to come. I never use such powers except in dire emergency, and then I must be very careful. We have discovered the existence of our universes beyond the physical, and we have learned to visit these worlds at will. On Venus, this has become a science in and of itself. Some of your writers on Earth have called them parallel universes. Such worlds of being actually do exist at different coordinates of time, space, matter, and even energy. There are also worlds beyond time, space, matter, and energy. In discovering and exploring them, we have solved the mystery called death, which happens to be nothing more than a transformation to one of these other worlds and a very natural part of an individual's life. Death seems a mystery here on Earth simply because so few here have discovered and explored these levels of reality and being and returned to tell about them. So the great challenge for man on Earth lies in unraveling the mysteries of life. I hope this book will unveil for you a greater conception of the world you live in and a greater conception of yourself, the individual. And you end with this last paragraph. I am not disturbed if you choose to call my life on Venus imaginary. My life on Venus imagination. Every creation of man, everything man made that you see around you was born in the imagination. Imagination is the most powerful facility in man and the key to the creation of reality. With his imagination, man is as much a creator as is God itself. That ends the chapter, chapter 1. I'm on page 38. Chapter 2 we'll do next Thursday is called The Laws of the Supreme Deity. And Omnic, what an amazing words you've written down. And thank you so much for doing this. And I'm sure people will look forward to hearing more of this and get a copy themselves.
Well, thank you very much for being the vehicle that is sharing this information with others. I appreciate that very much, Curtis.
Oh, thank you, Omnic. Thank
you. And imagination is the key to creation.
Yes, I loved how you... Yes, imagination. We can't build anything without imagining it first.
Exactly.
Has to first come in our mind. And then we make it a reality. And
exactly. We make it a reality by imagining it first and then creating it.
Well, thank you. And bless you, dear person, for being here and teaching us this.
And thank you for having me to share this with everyone.
All right. Well, we will call you and talk to you next Tuesday and continue. Next Thursday. All right, Omnic. I'll talk to you then.
Okay.
Bye, sweetheart. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.